Attention entrepreneurs and business owners. It's time to stop working so hard, start working smart, and build a business that stands on its own.
Generate real wealth, real freedom,
and a real legacy.
Now from New York City, small business champion and business attorney, helping thousands of entrepreneurs generate hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's Nina Kaufman, and this is the Cash Out Big Podcast.
Hey, how are you? Welcome to Cash Out Big, where we focus on getting your business running like a well-oiled machine so you can create the wealth, the freedom, and the legacy you've always wanted. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. Today on the show, I'm going to talk with private practice consultant Joseph Sanok, and we're going to look at what do you do with these kinds of businesses like professional services, creative services, private practices, where it's often been you and your genius and your background and your training that has been the thing that moves the business forward. But how do you go from there and then scale it? What are the mindset issues? What are the steps that you need to take to avoid the overwhelm so you really can grow and scale? And why is that so important? Well, I'll tell you, statistics indicate that 1 out of 4 of every American families, that's 1 out of 4 if you're listening, is going to be involved in what they call sandwich issues. That's caring for children and caring for parents at the same time. Not even your own health issues, which can crop up. But, you know, surprise, who knew? But children, parents, and also thinking about the life that you want to lead. You know, and that's when you have to take that time out. You'll hear our guest's story, which is incredible. He had a daughter who was undergoing heart surgery. He had his own issues with thyroid cancer. His wife was dealing with something. His mother was having surgery. I mean, it's just, you know, where do you stop? You have to say, I need the business to be able to run without me because I have to be elsewhere. That's important to me. It's really important to me to be caring for my wife, to be there at her bedside, to be able to be there for my kids as I'm feeding them breakfast. That's important. Or to be home by 5 o'clock so that you can help them with homework. That's important. And that deserves recognition. But that's really hard to do if your business is not able to generate revenue unless you are there. You know, and that's something that we talk about in our Cash Out Big video training at cashoutbigtraining.com. How do you get it to start running like a well-oiled machine? I mean, that's the metaphor, but the idea is that it can generate revenue if you are not there to micromanage it. And then what do you get in return? That you're getting, wow, oh, the breathing room, that freedom, and also the opportunity to create wealth for yourself, for your family, and your community at cashoutbigtraining.com. And it's also why I'm excited to have our guest on this week, because Joe Sanok really understands working with private practice consultants and people whose business and intellectual capital is within them. How do you grow that into a group practice? How do you scale that? And how do you get the leverage that lets you breathe more easily? And that's why we're delighted to have him here on Business Breakthrough. Joe, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Nina. This is awesome.
Really appreciate it, because you've had an experience similar to some of the rest of us who are in creative services and professional services, where you go to school, you learn a bunch of stuff, they kind of spit you out, and then you say, oh my God, what?
Right. Yeah, I think so often when we go into professional degrees, whether it's becoming an attorney, whether it's becoming a counselor, doctors, chiropractors, massage therapists, all these more like service-based type of jobs, we often have this mentality of our hour of time is worth a certain amount of money. And we don't know really how to scale that. We don't know how to market that. And I think that that journey is oftentimes a long and tough one for people, when it doesn't really need to be.
Yeah. You know, and you used a word that I go, oh, be still my beating heart. in your experience, what is it that makes practitioners say, yeah, I need to scale, or yes, I want more, as opposed to that retrenching? Oh, this is too much. I'm too busy. I'm too overwhelmed. I'm just going to pull back. What's the difference?
I think, well, why don't I tell you how I realized it? I was working at a community college as a counselor. I had this side gig of a small private practice on the side and this podcast for counselors in private practice. And I remember working that 40-hour-a-week job and having this kind of side gig that was starting to grow. and just being totally burned out. And in 2012, my youngest daughter, she had open heart surgery. A week after we were done with that, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. My wife had a miscarriage, and my mom was getting cancer treatment and had a heart attack. And on the end of all of that, it was one of those crazy years where it just put everything in perspective, where I had to ask myself, if I'm going to spend time on something, it's instead of being with my daughter who's about to have heart surgery, instead of having, you know, time with my wife as I go into cancer treatment, I'm spending it working on a business. And so for me, it took this like big shake, like, Joe, what are you doing with your time? And is this how you want to live your life? To really say to me, you know, you need to be smart about how you grow your business, about how you level up, about how you scale, about how you create more influence, more income, and more impact on the world, but in a way that matches my personality. And so I think most people that are counselors, attorneys, coaches, they know kind of what they want to do. They want to help people. They want to serve people, but they don't often know, how do I then scale this and get away from that 1 hour equals this amount of money? Because if you don't get away from that, the only way to make more money is for you to just work harder. And that is not sustainable or scalable.
Right. And ultimately, you come up against that upper limit of, what is it, 168 hours a week?
Right, right.
I'm a traveler. I don't think figured out a way to expand the number of hours in a week.
Right. And so kind of one of the first keys is to figure out, how do you have people work for you when you're not working? And so for me, that looked like slowly bringing on some 1099 contractors. And of course, you have to kind of work with your own attorney and look at your own state kind of laws and all of that as to whether you want a 1099 or a W-2. But having somebody that's working for you while you're not working is probably one of the very first things most people can do. And so even while I had my full-time job, I had two and then three other part-time people that I was getting paid while I was at my full-time job because they were working. So you can really add some part-time people in there to start to test whether or not your practice can grow and scale beyond just what your hours are.
That's a great idea for starting. And what is it about your business or your practice that needs to be in place so that when people are hiring these other practitioners, you're kind of getting the goodwill. You're getting the credit. They're associating it with your business.
So the way that I always frame it to new clinicians joining my practice is that my job is to make sure that mental wellness counseling is the premier place to refer in Traverse City. Traverse City, we live in northern Michigan. So that when people think counseling, when they think amazing counseling, great clinicians, that they think of us. And so I have to be out there. I have to be on the radio. I got to be writing articles for our local paper. I have to be the face of this whole kind of brand. But then they have to be within the practice out there networking with people they know so that when someone refers here, they know that Steve's the best for addictions or Tara's the best for eating issues or the custody evaluations are done by Marilyn. So that really within the practice, they're out there marketing themselves as well. And so I'm going to look for people that can get out there. They can meet people. They already have a network of people they're connected to that maybe I'm not connected to. So maybe they're involved in Rotary and I'm not involved in Rotary. Or maybe they're connected to the school system and I'm not connected to the school system. So I look for people that can expand the brand of mental wellness counseling well beyond just what I could do on my own time as well.
And just to clarify, mental wellness counseling is the name of your company. It's not just a description of what you do.
Correct, correct. So mental wellness counseling is our counseling private practice. And then my consulting practice is practice of the practice.
Very practical. So in terms of embracing the change, because I remember in law school, you're learning all kinds of different areas of law. And then you're spit out into the real world and say, all right, I'm tired of working for idiots. Well, that was sort of my story. I was tired of working for idiots. And I said, I'm going to do this and I'm going into business with a partner. What I learned very quickly is that doing the work is very different from running a business that provides services. How do you embrace the change? What are some of those techniques?
Yeah, well, I think you really have to ask yourself, am I just creating a job for myself? Which may be what you want. Maybe you're sick of agency work and you're like, I'm just going to have a solo practice or a small group practice. And really, I'm creating a job where I have a higher profit margin and I make a little bit more money than I would in an agency. So for some people, that's all they want. For me, I wanted to have a business that I could go on vacation and still be making money, that I could continue to expand and level up. And so I think that one of the big mindsets is, once you start getting people into your practice, when you start growing your business, you really have to look at your time. So for example, if I'm not making more money off of having the practice than I could in my individual counseling or consulting, then that's a problem. So for an example, if I'm making, say, $3,000 a month off of my clinicians, but my rent is $1,000, and then I have a virtual assistant that's answering the phones. And so maybe it's $1,500 in costs or expenses per month. And so I'm only grossing $1,500 off of these people. And if I'm spending, you know, 15 hours a month on this business, you know, that's only $100 an hour. That is much lower than what my counseling rates are and my consulting rates. And so it doesn't make sense for me to even have a business in that situation. So I have to then ask myself, well, how am I going to either cut costs or how am I going to cut my time? And more often than not, as the business owner, you're spending way more time on things that you shouldn't do. And you really, there's usually a lot of areas that you can cut to be more efficient in the way that you run your business.
And for those business owners who, or I should say practitioners who have had the epiphany that say, yes, I want more. I really want to be building this business so that it's generating money. Well, I can be with my child, my mother, my wife. What are some of the techniques for embracing the change? Because it is a different way of thinking about where your value lies.
Yeah. So the kind of repeatable model that I've come up with, it's the seven practices of the practice. And the seventh practice of that is outsourcing. And so you know where we're headed. Basically, when you achieve a goal within your practice or within your business, you want to outsource all of the non-essentials before you move on to your next goal. And so real quickly, the seven practices are evaluate where you're at. So what's worked in the past, what's working now, so that you can amplify what's working. So second is to define whether you're starting something new or growing something. And so that may be I'm adding clinicians to the practice to move away from a solo practice, or it might be that I'm going to grow a certain aspect of the practice that I haven't grown in the past. Third is planning core items. So looking at where you're going. So what's my 1-year goal, working back to what should I be doing this month, this week, today, and creating micro goals so that if somebody no-shows or you find that you're at a coffee shop and your friend shows up late, you can work on that moving forward. Fourth is creating content so that you can really attract the correct people to your practice. Fifth is attracting partners that are going to be referring to you. Sixth is serving your clients really well. And then seventh is that outsourcing. And I think that's probably the biggest key to the people that are able to continue to level up, continuing to expand and grow and scale, is that they brutally look at everything they're doing and say, what are the things that only I, Joe Sanok, can do? What are the things that only Nina can do? But what are the things that I could have a virtual assistant do, that I could automate through a computer system? I mean, there's so many tools out there that looking at what you can brutally take off your plate is so important, because if you just keep taking on new goals and scaling up, you're going to have so much on your plate that you're just going to get overwhelmed, stressed out, and then you're not going to be as effective as you could be.
You know, and that's really, that point of overwhelm leads me into how, you know, what I was thinking when you were asking the question or answering the question, which is there an ideal or best practices for those sequences of steps so that you aren't overwhelmed? Because there is so much in growing and scaling your business that you could possibly do all at once.
Right, right. Well, so the seven practices is actually just one component of it. So kind of the big three steps that I see is first, slow down. Second, then spark. So spark would be those like shower moments when you're like, oh my gosh, like why haven't I thought of this? That only happens after we slow down. So I can talk about some of the habits around slowing down. So slow down, spark, and then creation. And that creation is where you see those seven practices. So really it's the end of what I would say is this repeatable model. And I always start with slow down, because when you look at the highest achieving people, you know, the Steve Jobs of the world, the people that are innovating and creating something new, new models, they almost always have some routine of slowing down, some way that they set boundaries around, you know, their email or how they spend their time. And so for you know, your listeners, that might be that on Saturday, you just have it be like a tech-free day, or you promise yourself you're not going to check email after 5 o'clock when you get home, or you're going to wake up and you're going to meditate for 10 minutes a day before you do anything. Or maybe it's, you know, once a week, you're going to, you know, try to eat a little more kale. Like, I mean, who knows what it is for person, but it's like those small steps towards slowing down frees up your brain from just the onslaught of information we take in every day. So then you can genuinely have those like shower spark moments where just in general, you're slowing down and your brain has that chance to kind of wander around and really create something magnificent rather than just do what everybody else is doing in your industry.
You know, it reminds me of a story. I think it was in Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, where he tells a story of a fellow who was paid phenomenal amounts of money to literally sit for ideas. And he would sit in a small room with just a desk and a lamp and a pad and a piece of paper, and he would close his eyes and he would sit for ideas. And that, you know, that point of meditation, whatever it is, getting all of the distractions away from you so that you actually can focus on the next step is and what your goals are.
Yeah. I mean, I think about like most weekend mornings in our house. I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And on Saturday or on Sunday, like I get to sleep in one day. My wife gets to sleep in the other day. So we each can just like guilt-free sleep until 11 if we want. And if I sleep in, I know that I will wake up and I'll look and there will be Legos all over the floor. It will just be a total disaster because my wife has sat and drank coffee and enjoying the morning and just letting the girls play. Now, we then have a choice. We can kind of focus on the Legos and get them cleaned up, or we can say, hey, let's make a big breakfast. Let's go for a hike. Let's get out in the world. And as parents, you know, we always have the choice. Do I want to keep a spotless house on one kind of end of the spectrum, or do I want to go live life on the other end? And there's always this balance of, well, do I focus on the Legos or do I focus on the hike? And I think that in our businesses, the same sort of thing happens where there's times you have to go through the email. Like you can't just ignore that. But you also have to be asking yourself, like, what's the hiking here? What's going to move the needle forward so that we keep leveling up, we keep progressing, and that we don't just get stuck with those mundane tasks that just keep the thing going. We need to have new experiences that expand what our business is doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's great, because one of the things I mentioned in our podcast last week was that you can, I mean, the time passes really quickly. You know, somehow after, I don't know, age 20, boom, go. And you can be in your business and you're working every weekend and you're working every month and you're working through the holidays, and you wake up and it's 20 years later and you realize, wow, not only did I not take a major vacation that was unplugged, but I don't even know if I took a day trip.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you bring that up, because it was probably, let's see, it was the spring of 2015. My wife and I had a conversation about weekends, and I had already kind of set some boundaries around Saturdays. I wasn't checking email. And then for summer of 2015, I said, well, what if I just took Fridays off just to see if I could keep the same amount of productivity, same amount of income, but work only 4 days a week, not work later those days, but like end around 5 so I can be home for dinner, get the girls in bed, all that. And my income kept going up. And so then this summer, summer of 2016, we said, well, why don't I take Mondays off too and just see if I can make it work where I'm productive for 3 days and have a 4-day weekend. And you think about how many weekends we probably have for the rest of our life. And I just doubled the amount of weekends I have by doing that. And the productivity and the income has continued to go up, because we know that work will expand to the time allotted. And so what happens is I show up on Tuesday morning and I'm just like ready to run at my goals, because I'm so refreshed from spending that time with my family over the weekend, doing fun things, giving my mind a chance to just have a break, that then those 3 days are more productive than any of my days used to be when I wasn't taking that time off.
That's a great point. And so to segue on that, as you're pulling back, clearly you need to have other people present to be moving the business forward on a number of levels so that you can continue to increase your income. So how did you choose between, you mentioned you started with a couple of 1099 contractors. How did you choose when to move from the 1099 to bringing it in-house?
Well, so we're still 1099s with the counseling practice. Okay. I've worked with my attorney to make sure that kind of everything within Michigan is how it needs to be. And then with Practice of the Practice, what I do is I'll use different websites to find virtual assistants. So I love Upwork. So that's how I found my person that does all of my design for social media cards. She's made a bunch of handouts. She's actually now taking a bunch of old blog posts and repurposing them to make a quarterly downloadable magazine that we're going to sell. And so I can then kind of hand off all these ideas that I have that I would love doing. I mean, I love art. I love design. I think I'm pretty good at it, but it's not a good use of my time, and it's a better use of my money to just pay Samantha in South Africa to work on that than for me to do that. And so for most people, to give a couple steps around how to start outsourcing is you want to look at what are the projects on your plate first that you hate. I mean, the ones that you're just like, I do not like this. If this was off my plate, my life would just feel better. That's going to right away make your mind and your brain and your energy better. So start with those. How would you describe that to someone that has the skills but has never worked with you? And so really outlining, what is it that you want? And then I'll go onto a website like Upwork and I'll post what I want. So for example, I have 50 quotes that are business quotes. I want to have these made into social media cards that are optimized for Twitter and Instagram. So it'll be 100 cards total of these 50 quotes. For your interview, you need to make 2 quotes. I want you to go to my website and I want you to look at my design and come up with your best job that you could do. So that's part of the interview process. So Samantha, she went to my website. She actually downloaded my logo. She included that before she's ever been paid. And she understood my design so well before we ever even had a conversation that really she can almost read my mind now, because I took the time during that interview process to make sure I found someone that could match my design and didn't have to be coached as much as just clarify. So what's happened now is with Sam, I continue to grow kind of what she's doing because her intuition is amazing. And if you take that time at the front end to really in that interview process, when you're finding a virtual assistant, to nail what you want from the project and then nail finding that person, it saves you so much time. And then you can just offload things using a project management tool like Trello, or that's what I use for ours. And so I'll be in line at the grocery store and drop an idea in there and Sam will work on it while I'm sleeping.
That's a beautiful thing.
It is.
But it also sounds like you're really clear about your goals. So is the goals approach to goal setting any different when you're saying, yes, I want to grow a group practice versus not sure, I think I want to just keep it smaller?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the same sort of model of clarifying your goals and then eventually outsourcing them. But you need to be very clear on kind of where you're headed and what you like. There's a lot of people that maybe they don't want to manage 10 counselors or they don't want to manage 10 partners in the practice. And so I think starting with what would be a step forward for me. So maybe it's not that. Maybe it's just raising your rates. So you're optimizing your time. You're seeing the right kind of client. You're charging the right rate or a higher rate than your competitors so that you move away from just, I can only make this much per hour. So that might be, if I want to be in a solo practice, how do I clarify my specialty? How do I then speak to that specialty by creating content, blog posts, useful downloads to get leads? And then how do I move into charging a higher rate for my services?
Great, terrific. And is there something in, in expanding to the group practice, just to jump back to the sequence of steps, thinking, as you say, first getting off of your plate what absolutely doesn't need to be there. And that's something we also talk about in our Business Strong program. Look at what you absolutely hate and look at what you really suck at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you're not doing it well, it's not going to be efficient. And there could actually be some legal issues with that. Like your bookkeeping when it comes to your taxes, that could really be a problem. So in terms of the steps for what you're looking at, after looking at what you hate, what would be the next step in terms of growing that?
Yeah. So in growing a group practice, so I think making sure that kind of the ship is like tightened as much as it can be before you bring people on, because as you add people, it's just going to expose more and more of those flaws. So if you don't have an attorney, if you don't have an accountant, if you don't have people that have those extra eyes, get those in place first so that your practice is as kind of tight knit as possible before you bring other people in. And then I think that really taking time to attract the right people. So similar to the outsourcing conversation, sit down and have coffee with people. Don't do formal interviews, because you want to see, especially in a counseling private practice, you want to see if someone's a good fit for the culture, for what your dreams are for the practice. I know that the times that I've gone against my gut where I've said, man, this person's great on paper and like they have these skills and they're connected in the community, but my gut was like, I kind of don't like being around them. Well, when they joined the practice, I didn't like being around them and they were way more work than they were worth. And so for me, it starts with a cup of coffee. You know, there's a great coffee shop that serves amazing, you know, fair trade coffee next door. So we just start there and I make sure I like them. And then, you know, you want to look at what are the skills and the network that they bring into the practice that you don't have. I used to think that I needed to have a certain flow of clients coming in before I brought somebody new on. But then I brought this lady, Sarah, on, and she only works Saturdays. She's full time during the week at a community mental health. And the very first Saturday that she started, she had 4 new clients. And that was completely new clients that she found, that she had kind of marketed herself. So she went out, she put it on Facebook, I'm joining mental wellness counseling on this date. She got cards printed up saying, in June 2015, I'm going to be starting at mental wellness counseling. And then her first Saturday, she was as full as she wanted to be. And for me, that really showed me that someone brings their own bubble of people into your business that you never would have had access to. So I think really kind of going up against that mindset is really important too. So then I think after that, really making sure that you are clear on what your onboarding process is. And so for me, I have a checklist of all the things, everything from, you know, get them a key to get their email set up, just so that you don't miss a step and waste your own time later on. And eventually having somebody else do that onboarding. And so that could be an assistant. It could be somebody else that's doing all those non-essentials. And then after that, making sure that you're connecting with those people on an ongoing basis. People stick around, not just for the money, but also for the culture. And so making sure that you're clear as to what your culture is.
You're talking about culture. How does one define a culture in their business without just saying, oh, this is kind of how we feel? Particularize that so that other people get it.
In my business, culture has been an extension of what I want to get out of the business. And you know, you have to ask yourself, is that what other people want? Am I losing people because of the culture? I think the reason that I started a private practice initially was just to kind of earn side income to pay off student loans. And you know, over time, it continued to grow. And as I teach people how to do that, the consulting side is a little different. But for me, it's really been about, hey, I want to show up, do really good work, and be able to then go spend time with my family. And so I think that within my own culture here, I look for people that maybe that's one of their priorities too. Not that they don't want to connect with other people, but they also really want to get some things done. They want to show up. They want to, you know, see clients. They want to get home and hang out with their family. And then maybe during their free time, that's when they choose to hang out with coworkers. So I think for other people, it starts with what's the culture that I really want to create here? For me, what would feel fulfilling? So that may not be as efficient as my culture is, and that's okay. And then I think looking at, am I attracting the right people to match that culture, or am I potentially losing people because the culture is too close to kind of how I want to run the business? And there's a lot of great assessments out there, like the How the World Sees You assessment. We use that with our team to really talk about, like, what does each person bring to the team? What's their unique perspective when they're in a team setting? That's been a great tool for us to use.
Great. Terrific. And any last pearls of wisdom, anything that you haven't shared yet about what does it mean to really start to scale, get that right mindset, and take the steps and overcome whatever the concerns are that you won't be able to handle it?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is people that listen to podcasts and read blogs are usually high achievers in a lot of ways, and they consume a lot of information. And it's great that you're listening to Nina's podcast. It's great that you're consuming information, but you can't always consume. I mean, in the same way that if you just consumed food but sat on the couch all the time, like, you wouldn't get fit. So you've got to get out and do some action. So I would say when you're listening to Nina's podcast, when you're reading other people's blogs or listening to podcasts, make sure that you're taking action from each podcast that you listen to. So if someone talks about websites, maybe note down one or two things about your own website that you're going to change so that you're not just consuming, but you're actually taking action and really learning to set those goals to create something better than you have right now.
Great. Terrific, Joe. Such fabulous insights on, again, the mentality, thinking about how to scale, and really creating a business that serves our life, that doesn't just run our life. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been a lot of fun. And we're really excited about kind of the stuff we're creating over at practiceofthepractice.com.
And thank you for tuning in to Cash Out Big. Is your business running like a well-oiled machine? If not, you need to stop driving yourself crazy and check out our Cash Out Big video training and get your business under control. You can find this and other great resources at businessexponential.com. Go there now, and I'll see you on the next podcast.